Hey guys, Ron Alcoholic, holy crap. Okay, I was really excited when the microphone wasn't working. I kind of wanted to go back to that. Ron Alcoholic. Sobriety date's March 8th of 2010. To new guys, I would never have believed me. I assure you it's real. I wouldn't have believed the guy was 6 months, honestly. When I first came to my first meeting, I saw people getting chips, and the guy that got like 1 month, I could fathom that. But you two are the most important people here. It's why we're all here. It's why I'm speaking. It's so that you know that you can do this, even though you don't think you can. So, alcohol for me did not make me feel like I was any cooler. When I first started drinking, I had like a foot and a half tall mohawk, acne, braces, so it didn't make me look any better. Like, it didn't do anything for me except for one thing, and exactly what I wanted it to do. It made me not care about anything. My car could be on fire and I would be like, meh. And that's what I wanted. I wanted to be numb. I wanted to be numb to the thoughts in my brain. I wanted to be numb to your thoughts. This is really loud. The first time I drank, like that was the feeling I got. Like, I just didn't care what you thought. I didn't care what I thought. And it was amazing. It was so amazing that the book talks about the phenomenon of craving. My first time drinking, my friend was breaking bottles that I could have drank, and I fought him over it. Like, because we were out. I was 13 years old, and I'm beating the crap out of my friend for breaking wine coolers. Yes, wine coolers. I was hardcore drunk. I'm going to skip over some time because at 13 years old, I wasn't exactly the hardcore alcoholic that I became. I was the 13-year-old that drank every chance he got. So I'm skipping right to college, all right? My college years looked very much like the years of when I got sober. I was getting arrested on a pretty much weekly basis. I had failed out of every class for 5 years. I just kept reapplying and getting the financial aid and putting that towards booze, like doing what we do. And it was pretty sad. So Christmas Eve, I went out for our big work event and had a great time, so great that I died. And my boss found out, so I lost my job. Clearly, they resuscitated me because I'm here. But I had clinically died. And this was also going to become something that became a regular thing for me as well. Because after I got out of the hospital, they had me on like the IV and all that fun stuff. So I woke up and I felt great. And my parents showed up and gave me $50 and bought me some new clothes because the EMTs had to cut everything off of me to like clear and all that. And I went straight to the bar. And for the first time in my drinking career, people started asking me, why are you still drinking? Like, last time we saw you, you were collapsed in the middle of the street dead, and here you are again. And it didn't faze me at all. Like, I honestly, truly didn't think that I had a problem. I thought I was just another college student who got too drunk. Until a week later when I did it again. This time my parents didn't come. It was the start of them kind of not, I won't say giving up, but let's use that for the best term I can come up with. So I'll leave the story out of it, but I got arrested for something that could have been pretty bad. And I was basically given 3 days to get out of that town. 30 days to get out of that town. It took me 3 days because I just couldn't hold my shit together. So I packed my iguana, a guitar, some clothes, and some CDs, and was like, good enough, and moved back in with mom and dad. With like the first resolute promise that I'm gonna do things different now. You know, like, I was always a screw up back in high school and junior high, and but let's be realistic, like, none of that matters. What the grades you got in high school didn't matter. College, I felt like a real failure now. And I decided I'm going to straighten up, and I got this job working with mentally disabled adults, and I ended up being really good at it. And within like a year, I got promoted to assistant manager of a house. And within a year of that, I got promoted to manager of a house. And I was partying on the weekends and doing some other extracurricular activities that we don't talk about in AA. But for the most part, like, I was actually doing pretty okay, especially on the outside. On the inside, I wanted to tear my skin off because all I wanted was to just party all the time like I used to. It's how I felt comfortable. So I met this hostage, my now ex-wife, who our first date was her watching me and my friend Raftery do white powdered stuff. Like, that was literally our first date. And she asked me, what are we doing? And I was like, we are doing it. And somehow she stayed with me long enough for me to trick her into marrying me. But she partied like I partied when we partied. When we partied. She didn't drink like I drank, though. At this point, I started getting back into my old habits. You know, Tuesday drinking was fine again. So was Wednesday and Thursday and the other days. But she didn't have any issue with it. And I was still holding it together at work because I didn't have to be at work until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I could handle that. And I also had access to a giant medicine cabinet, and that helped me make it through every day. I'll get into that later, though. I was holding it together to the best of my ability, but pretty much this is where, like, the end started coming. I now was drinking whether I wanted to or not. And there were a lot of times I didn't want to. So I'm going to fast forward to pretty much the end when I came into my first meeting. At the end of my drinking career, I was stealing medicine from mentally disabled people so that I could make it through my day. I was stealing money from mentally disabled people so that I could afford to make it through my day. I was cheating on my wife on a very consistent basis, because I was also bartending at my favorite bar, and those two things go hand in hand. So I thought. That's just some of the things I was doing, all right? I wasn't really getting arrested anymore, you know, so that was cool. But what made me want to come here was the idea of having to brush my teeth in the morning meant looking in the mirror. One, it was physically difficult to brush my teeth because putting a toothbrush in my mouth was not cool first thing in the morning. But two, like looking at that guy who is now trying to piece together his night, figure out how he's going to explain where he was all night to his wife, make it to work, try to figure out how I'm going to shuffle money around so nobody figures out what I'm doing. Like, you get my point here. I became everything in this world that I hated. So I went to my bar one night, or that night, and we closed early, so I ended up going to the other bar I go to on the way home from my bar, which was like this seedy, dark shithole, my favorite kind of place. You know, like the dartboard doesn't even have the grill on it, like that kind of place. And I'm basically telling this old man about my life and what's going on to some extent, and he told me to go to AA. Like, a guy at a bar told me to go to AA. And my thought of AA was basically what you saw in Fight Club. Like, a bunch of old dudes sitting around in a circle crying to each other about their life. It's not lost on me that I was sitting in a bar talking to an old dude crying about my life. But I definitely did not want to go to AA. I woke up the next morning, and for some reason, I really wanted to go to AA. I remembered what that old man said, and I called the AA hotline and ended up at my first meeting. It was super awkward because I shared and then found out when I got shut down that I was at an Al-Anon meeting. My second meeting went a lot better. It was at the same church the next day. And everyone was super welcoming. So welcoming that they took me to this diner until 4 o'clock in the morning. I didn't realize they were keeping me there so I wouldn't go to the bar. But, you know, they were telling me their stories and making me realize, like, I'm one of them. So to the two new guys especially, this part of my story I don't recommend. That was not my last drink. I came to AA. I heard a message that I could get better. But I was going to get better on my own. So I kept coming to meetings, but I didn't get a sponsor. I wasn't working steps. I wasn't doing anything other than just trying to sit on my hands and not drink. This was pretty much the worst time of my entire life. You take away the alcohol from an alcoholic, you take away everything if you don't give them a solution. This is when I really learned the idea of step one, that I'm going to drink whether I want to or not without the help of a higher power, AA, you guys, a sponsor, a whole litany of things that I'm supposed to do every day to keep me from drinking. I was doing none of them, and I couldn't stop drinking, even though every single day I said, I'm going to a meeting and I'm not going to drink today. So basically, I got to experience the demoralization they talk about enough that I finally decided to do this thing. What happened was I died again, which, like I said, isn't new to me. Like, I didn't come to AA because I was tired of getting arrested and hospitalizations and all that. I didn't care about that. What I cared about was the repercussions of this time. My godson, who his only requirement for me being an awesome godfather is existing was at the hospital to say goodbye to his godfather, because the doctors told him, or told my family, that I wasn't going to make it this time. And I woke up and he was in my hospital room on my bed and literally just looked at me and asked me not to go. And I pretty much lost my shit. I had let down a four-year-old, to the point where, not like I didn't get him a Christmas present, I just died again. I couldn't do this shit anymore, man. So I called my sponsor when they released me with my how to quit smoking pamphlet. That's what they gave me. I don't know. I called my sponsor and I asked him to pick me up, and he said, okay, cool, let's go to a meeting. And I said, okay. And he picked me up, and I thought we were going to my house because I was in little paper booties and, like, the hospital gown, because, again, they had to cut my clothes off. And he said, no, we're going to a meeting. And I went to a meeting dressed in that. So that was pretty embarrassing. That was, like, the most humbling white chip I can think of. So, everything changed from that day on, though. Anything I was told to do, I did. I taught myself step one of the powerlessness by drinking, you know. My sponsor still went over it with me, but I didn't get the unmanageability part. It had to be explained to me that the unmanageability was the reason I came to AA, how I felt about myself and my life. You know, how I couldn't be a godfather, how I couldn't be a son, a husband, a friend, anything that I wanted to be. Then came the biggest roadblock of them all, was God. I didn't hate God or anything like that. I wasn't really raised in a super religious household. I had to go to church until I got confirmation, and then, like, it was up to me what I wanted to do, and I didn't go to church anymore, ever again. It was more that I just didn't care, and I couldn't find a reason. There's an obvious reason, that's why I'm here. But I couldn't find a reason to need an actual, like, spiritual God. It just wasn't something that was ingrained in me. So for the first year or so, I pretty much used the runes. I used you guys. I used the phone. It was the best I could do for where I was at. Sorry, that threw me off. I was living in my car at this point, because at 3 months sober, all of those things that I had been doing, they caught up to me. My wife found out about the cheating, and she threw me out. My job found out that I was, well, sleeping with my employees, and I lost that job. So, middle of October, New York, in a soft-top Jeep, it was really cold. So I called my folks and begged, and their only question was basically, how long are you sober, and do you plan on staying sober? And I told them my big 3 months, and that was good enough, and they said, move on down here. So I moved down here, and with my step one done and my, well, when I moved down here, I had my steps done, but I'm getting to my God part, so. I moved down here and pretty instantly the phone became really heavy. You know, once somebody isn't physically in my life all the time, like I'm just one of those people. I have a hard time making the phone call and keeping in contact. And all of a sudden, my higher power wasn't really present in my life. I moved to Citrus County, not to Tampa. There is not AA like there is in Tampa and Citrus County. It's there. I had to drive an hour to Ocala to get to it. And at about a year sober, I was through and through suicidal or drinking, one of the two. And suddenly, when I was saying before, I didn't really have a need for a spiritual God, I did. I started praying, and who would have guessed? You guys were right. It worked. I felt better. It wasn't any kind of burning bush moment or anything like that. It was just a feeling that something else is there for me. I haven't stopped praying since that day. And it hasn't stopped working since that day. And if you think that that's something I ever thought I was going to say, you're kind of crazy. Like, it's not who I am. Or it wasn't. It's who I am now. So, we're going to go back to Long Island for a little bit and work some steps. My step four and five, I was the guy who sat on it for a little while. Here's what I learned when you sit on your fourth step. You spend every waking minute thinking about everything on your fourth step until you go absolutely batshit crazy. And then you hear this old dreaded punk rock dude talk about how you're going to die if you don't do your fifth step. And you feel like an idiot. And then you call your sponsor and you do your fifth step. Or at least that's how it worked for me. I would suggest just doing it. But here's what happened. I did my fifth step, and all of a sudden I felt like I was a part of AA. All of a sudden I felt like I did some real work on who I am as a human being, which up to this point was not all that great. And in that moment, I still wasn't all that great because I hadn't done anything to fix any of that, but at least I was finally acknowledging all of the shit that was wrong with me. And almost instantly, I was feeling what you're supposed to feel for step six. Like, it's like the meeting killer is step six and seven. Like, you read that portion of the book and you just get crickets. Six and seven are my favorite steps in this whole program. I came to AA because I wanted to stop being a scumbag. And six and seven are exactly what helped me stop being a scumbag. Six and seven are me finally becoming the person that I want to be. If I'm a little bit better of a person than I was yesterday, I did awesome today. And that was the feeling I got when I did that little like hour of meditation and talked to this God that I was just starting to form a relationship with, was, oh my God, you don't have to be a scumbag anymore. You can be a good son, you can be a good husband. Well, that was over. Make up your own list. So now is the scary part. I had to actually like work on this whole amends thing. I wasn't afraid to admit I was wrong or anything. I was afraid to talk to people, if that makes sense. I don't mind admitting I'm wrong. I was wrong all the time. All the time. What I wanted to avoid was having to call all these people who I haven't talked to in years and start some kind of conversation enough to be able to make those amends. And basically I was told, I wasn't given you need to become willing. I was told, you're doing your amends. That was pretty much how that went for me. And my first amends, I ran into this dude, Ryan, who basically we dated each other's exes and it didn't go very well. And I went to make my amends and he punched me in the face. That was my first amends. And it was awesome. Because after the pain subsided, I still got out what I needed to say. And I still righted my wrong as best to my ability. And I thought about that guy on a really consistent basis. Now, I don't think about him unless I'm sharing my story or talking about my first amends. That resentment was instantly taken away, which was one of the most magical feelings of this entire program. All of my other amends went a lot better. More than likely, you won't get punched in the face, so good luck. At that point, I moved, pretty much the week after making that amends, I moved down here. And like I said, everything changed. I found God. Never thought I'd find him in Florida. I didn't mean that way. I meant I never thought I'd be in Florida. But, sorry. I hated Citrus County, man. AA was not New York AA. And everyone in my neighborhood was at least 65. So there was no women. There was no friends. There was no anything. And a friend of mine worked at Geico and got me a job, and I got to move to Tampa. And one of the coolest things that ever happened was finding actually this meeting. I moved here and immediately started looking for meetings, I think I moved here on a Tuesday, and by Thursday I tried YPG because my home group back on Long Island was YPG. And it was the coolest thing ever. I had never seen that many young people in AA. At the time, I was 28, so I still, was young. I don't know if I still qualify. But it was amazing walking into a room full of a bunch of people that were actually my age. What's even cooler is being here today and seeing a lot of those same faces. And they're all the same faces that were putting in the work and a part of the meeting. Still here. Still helping people. So when I moved here, I'm not the most outgoing guy, so it took me a little bit to make friends. And I started this whole step 10 process and really started getting into meditation. I lived by myself in a townhouse and had a nice big comfy couch. And really quickly, meditation became a really pivotal part of my program. I've never heard God actually talk to me, and if I do, I'm going to be really scared. But it's when I listen. It's the only time I don't think about me. I am so good at thinking about me. It's probably the main thing I think about. When I'm meditating and just like counting my breath, it's my new version of shutdown, you know? So I only have a couple minutes left, and the only thing that matters to me these days is sponsorship. For two reasons. One, the book tells me that this fellowship is going to grow up around me. If I'm not sponsoring guys, this fellowship is not growing. If I'm not sponsoring, imagine AA without sponsors. Like, nobody would be here. You know, I needed to be shown the ropes, and if I'm not showing other people the ropes, I'm doing disservice to AA. The other side of it, though, is the keep me sober side, the reason we're here. Sponsoring guys, the obvious, gets me out of my head, but most importantly, it's what gets me to God. When I'm speaking to a new guy sitting at, I don't know, Panera Bread or one of the many places we use, stuff comes out of my mouth that I didn't know I believed until I say it. Like, that is God talking to me. You know, I learn shit about this program every time I bring another guy through the steps. Stuff I didn't know I knew, stuff I didn't know I believed. So if I want to get closer to God, I need to get closer to new guys. So, yeah, I know I didn't say it in the beginning, but I have a sponsor and I have sponsees. What's super cool is my sponsees have sponsees and those sponsees have sponsees, which means that first part I was talking about is working. My fellowship is growing up around me. Those guys are my friends now. That's probably the one thing I'm more grateful for than anything else in this entire program is sponsorship. So I'm going to leave it at that. Thank you.